I think the Democrats are making a big mistake if they think that it's safer to err on the hawkish side than the dovish side.
So we know the government lies. And little Bush, the shrub, is one of the greatest natural-born liars ever to grace the White House.
There's just no evidence.
You can talk about these weapons, but if you don't have a means of delivering these weapons, then there is no real threat.
I am an American and I will not be silent.
1, 2, 3, 4, we don't want preemptive war. 1, 6, 7, 8, stop the violence, stop the hate. 1, 2, 3, 4, we don't want preemptive war.
Voices of Opposition. This is a show about peace, preserving it, promoting it, and monitoring those who would seek to destroy it. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Thank you for joining us. House debate on a resolution authorizing the Bush administration's use of force in Iraq continued today. Strong opposition came from several representatives, including Wisconsin Democrat Jerry Kletza, who questioned the evidence that's been offered as a justification for going to war.
The administration continues to assert that Iraq is an urgent threat to our national security and that we are at risk of an Iraqi surprise attack. But the resolution before us offers no substantiation of these allegations, speaking only of hunches, probabilities, and suspicions. That is not sufficient justification to start a war. Further, there is reference to the 9/11 terrorism we suffered and the assertion that members of Al-Qaeda are in Iraq. After extensive investigation, our intelligence community could find no link between the Iraqi regime and the plot that led to last year's deadly terrorist attacks. The resolution further asserts, also without any evidence, that there is a great risk that Iraq could launch a surprise attack on the United States with weapons of mass destruction. It is fact that Saddam does not possess a delivery system that has a throw power of 8,000 miles or anything even close. And if there is such a great risk that he has and will use biological and chemical weapons against us, why didn't he do so in the Gulf War? The answer is because he knew that our response would be strong, swift, and fatal. The evidence does not show that Iraq has any nuclear capabilities. General Wesley Clark, former commander of NATO forces in Europe, contends that despite all the talk of loose nukes, Saddam doesn't have any, or the highly enriched uranium or plutonium to enable him to construct them. One of the goals of the president is to force a regime change in Iraq. Who are we to dictate to another country that their leadership must be changed? What would be our reaction if another country demanded or threatened to remove President Bush? All of us, Republicans and Democrats alike, and each and every American would be infuriated by such inference and interference and rise up against them. Changes, my friends, in regimes must come from within.
Meanwhile, debate also began in the Senate today. Republican John Warner of Virginia said he feels ready for a vote, but many others, like Maryland Democrat Paul Sarbanes, said they need more time.
In 1990-91, I and all of us here, most of us, were involved in that debate. The record shows the debate began on January the 10th, 1991, on the Persian Gulf resolution. That debate started on the 10th. It concluded 2 days later, just 2 days later, on January the 12th, 1991. Let us hope that we have had adequate time, in my judgment, on this, having begun on the 3rd, as stated by the chair, and now we're here today with 13 amendments which have just been submitted, which will be respectfully treated.
Would the senator yield for further questions?
Yes, I yield.
Would the senator agree with me that the time frames which the senator from Virginia just set out, both in 91 and now, show that a deterioration in the Senate's level of commitment in terms of debate on important matters of state? We took up an important matter of foreign policy, Panama Canal treaties. There were two of them. We spent 6 weeks on one and 4 weeks on the other. Now we're here with a resolution to take us to war, and we're told, well, we've been on it not quite a week. And then we're cited as as a precedent. Well, in 91, we did it in a few days.
Democrat Senator Paul Sarbanes. Senator Robert Byrd of West Virginia threatened to delay the vote using procedural tactics.
The American people are just now awakening to the fact that the United States Senate and the House are about to pass a resolution that turns the power of the people, as measured by their elected representatives and Congress, over to a commander-in-chief. The power to determine when to go to war, power to declare war. They're just now becoming awake to that fact. So I plead with the nation's representatives here in the Senate, with the leadership in the other body, I plead with senators to ask to make every effort to try to get a unanimous consent request to waive this cloture vote on tomorrow. We're shortchanging the American people. We're shutting ourselves out of the opportunity, and only by unanimous consent can we waive them. But in the name of the people of this country, in the name of the young men and women whose lives may be put on the line by the decision that this Senate will make tomorrow morning at 10:15, is too weighty, is too far-reaching, and it's only fair to the people of America who are going to be asked to give, in some instances, everything they've got, everything they have, if a war ensues. And I tell you, my friends, I don't want that on my conscience.
West Virginia Senator Robert Byrd. Some opposed to the president's war agenda have entered a new element into the debate. There are widespread media reports today that President Bush exaggerated the threat that Saddam Hussein poses to the U.S. and that CIA experts predict an attack might provoke Saddam to use terror against the U.S. Mel Goodman is a senior fellow at the Center for International Policy and a former CIA analyst.
Well, I think this is a new wrinkle, as you say, but I think it's also a dangerous wrinkle, because if you look at the letter closely, what the CIA is doing is trying to get in line with the Bush policy of justifying why we need to go to war in Iraq. And it's based on a lot of supposition, very little evidence. There's no real idea of the credibility of the evidence. And a lot of the information has been around for a long time, and it begs serious questions about why it's being released now. What comes from the overall letter is clearly U.S. policy is a self-fulfilling prophecy that Saddam Hussein has no plans, no intentions to use chemical or biological or nuclear weapons against the United States, but he might do so if we attack first. So it's clear that there is no imminent danger from Saddam Hussein, and even the CIA agrees with that. But at the same time, the CIA is helping the administration prepare a case for going to war that's, I think, based on a house of cards.
It does seem to be a bit of a tangled web. I mean, on the one hand, one might read this and say, well, that makes a case for us, for the U.S. not to strike. If he indeed has the capability and could be provoked to launch some sort of a chemical, biological, or conventional terrorist attack against the U.S.,
right, and it really says nothing about capabilities. We don't have hard and fast knowledge about capabilities. In fact, that's the strongest case that can be made. That is the case for going back in with inspections to find out exactly what Saddam Hussein has, which we did in the 90s and had a great success in terms of finding these weapons of mass destruction and also destroying a good many of them. What I'm concerned about is that this is another example of a president, as Lyndon Johnson did during the Vietnam War, as William Casey and Robert Gates did in the 1980s with the Soviet Union, spinning the intelligence in the direction of policy. So if you look at the list of charges, they're very flimsy. One charge is that Iraq and al-Qaeda members have discussed safe haven. Well, no indication that safe haven was given, only that it was discussed. And we don't know who the source of this material is. Another part of the letter says there have been contacts over the past decade. So why are we learning about this now? And then there's another charge that al-Qaeda has sought contacts to get help on weapons of mass destruction. Well, seeking contacts is not the same as establishing them, let alone having success in making contacts and getting actual information, help, and training. So it's very worrisome in how the CIA is playing along with the administration in order to make a case at the very last minute when the Congress is about to vote on a war resolution.
In fact, there were also reports today, one in the Guardian newspaper, which says that some intelligence officials are being pressured to produce documents that would support the administration's claims, assertions, and allegations made by President Bush against the Iraqi regime Monday night in his address from Cincinnati. And according to that particular article, some were not pleased with that.
Yes, I've talked to people who claim there's a great deal of pressure on the CIA, some at the highest levels. There's a lot of pressure on George Tenet as the director from the Office of the Secretary of Defense to be more helpful and more persuasive in making a case that backs the administration's case to go to war. And there's a definite feeling that the Pentagon is engineering this kind of campaign, which is, I think, part of psychological operations against the American public right now, not against the Iraqi people. It's the American people who, I think, are the victims of this psychological warfare in terms of how capable is Saddam Hussein, what kind of intentions does he have, what kind of weapons does he hold. Let's face it, we don't really know any of that. But what we do know is that his military is far weaker than it was 10 years ago, that he doesn't have strategic capability, and that he lost a lot of his chemical and biological capability in the 1990s with the successful inspections. So this is a very peculiar event that's taking place, and it certainly suggests that intelligence is being used.
So is the intelligence community likely to cook something up to satisfy the president's need for documentation or support on this?
Well, this has been done before. It's not like there is no precedent for this. The CIA did this in the 1960s during the Vietnam War when they held down the numbers of the Viet Cong sort of to help the Pentagon make its case that we were winning the war against Vietnam. George Tenet himself went down on the Hill in the 1990s. And said that we couldn't verify the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty when all of the major scientists in this country knew that the CIA had this capability to verify an arms control treaty. And, of course, William Casey and Robert Gates did this to support Iran-Contra, to play up the role of the Sandinistas in Nicaragua, and also to ignore the collapse of the Soviet Union in the 1980s to support Ronald Reagan's unprecedentedly high defense budgets. So this has happened before, and I think this episode suggests that the president is trying to politicize intelligence again, but the worrisome thing is that George Tenet, the director of CIA, is playing along with this effort. I think this needs to be investigated by the Senate Intelligence Committee because it should be linked with the intelligence failure of 9/11 to show how the intelligence community is used in a political way by the administration. And where it has not done its job successfully.
In fact, in this post-September 11th climate, even with increased security and heightened awareness, how vulnerable is the U.S. to terrorist attacks, either conventional, biological, or chemical, from Saddam Hussein or Osama bin Laden or anybody else for that matter?
Well, there is no vulnerability right now from Saddam Hussein. I don't think anyone can really make that case. The CIA is stretching the little bit of evidence that it has to try to suggest that he could threaten us. But the fact is, you can talk about these weapons, but if you don't have a means of delivering these weapons, then there is no real threat. And there is no indication whatsoever that Saddam Hussein has the means to deliver weapons of mass destruction as far away as the United States, and no evidence of intentions to do so. The Al-Qaeda terrorist network is a different matter because you do have Al-Qaeda cells that are all over the world, and we do know that the FBI and the CIA did such a poor job of finding these cells and then pursuing these individuals once names were discovered. So Al-Qaeda is a different matter, but we're not talking about that war, the so-called war against terrorism. Now we're talking about abandoning the war against terrorism in what I think is a diversion, because to move against Iraq now and to move against Saddam Hussein, where you cannot even make a case for it, but to do so would be to divert our energies, divert our resources against the more important war against terrorism, in which we need the support of our allies. So to divert this attention and to anger the allies who don't agree with us on the case that we're making, I think will harm the national security interests of the United States.
Of course, there are those who, the president amongst them, who try to make the link between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda.
He tried to make it in Cincinnati, and it was very ineffective. I think what was really telling, if he wanted to use intelligence information, why didn't he use it last month when he was at the United Nations, and basically the entire international community was waiting for President Bush to do what President Kennedy did during the Cuban Missile Crisis, which was to show actual intelligence information, in this case photographs from the U-2 aircraft, to make the case of Soviet weapons being introduced into Cuba. Well, President Bush didn't do anything like that. He basically repeated charges that were old and dated and circumstantial, and he left the international community very confused. Now we're on the eve of a vote in the Congress, and the CIA is lending itself in really an effort that deals with policy advocacy and domestic politics, where the CIA doesn't belong. They shouldn't be advocating one policy or another, and they don't belong in any role involving domestic politics. And that's what is so worrisome about this.
Mel Goodman is a senior fellow at the Center for International Policy and a former CIA analyst. Pacifica's KPFK's morning show host, Sonali Kolhatkar, moderated a debate regarding President Bush's recent speech on his justification for going to war with Iraq between Robert Jensen, a professor of journalism at the University of Texas, and Carol Platt LeBeau, a political expert and recent consultant for the Ashcroft for Senate campaign. LeBeau responded to a question about a Senate report that the United States, under the Reagan and Bush senior administrations, sold biological weapons to Iraq up until March of 1992.
My response to that is, number one, I reject a number of the assertions and the characterizations made by Robert Jensen. Second of all, the question is, even assuming the United States did that, given that now we all know that Saddam Hussein hates America and is a murderous thug and has hegemonic ambitions, does that still justify the fact that we let him remain in a position where he is capable of blackmailing the Middle East and eventually the entire world? Whatever the U.S. did or did not do, is that a justification for allowing someone who is a tyrant, a repressive dictator, and a madman with hegemonic ambitions to maintain a deadly stockpile that could be used against our soldiers, our people, and other innocent people in the Middle East? Again, no matter how evil or how misguided you may believe U.S. policy to be, do you still believe that that justifies leaving Saddam Hussein in control of a stockpile of deadly weapons? That's really the question.
Well, let me ask.
Can I respond?
Go ahead, Robert.
First of all, I've never said U.S. policy is evil. Those are words that people like George Bush use to try to manipulate people. What I've said is that many people have said, is that United States policy is not aimed at liberating the people of Iraq. It's not aimed at stopping terrorism. It's aimed at controlling the oil, the flow of oil, and the flow of oil profits in the Middle East. That's not about evil or not evil. It's about people with power trying to consolidate their power. And this constant reference to Saddam as a madman, as a crazy man, Saddam is a brutal, murderous dictator. It doesn't mean he's insane or he's suicidal. Now, there's this sort of notion in the United States that even though we're an empire, we're the world's first benevolent empire, and we're going forward in some sort of, you know, gracious and benevolent spirit. I mean, the first thing the American public has to do is sort out the reality from the rhetoric and just put aside these sort of fantasies of American nobility and innocence and start talking about the world as it is. George Bush said nothing last night, nor has the administration ever offered evidence that Saddam Hussein is a tangible and real threat. Is he a potential threat? Yes. But, you know, there's a lot of people in France who hate America and don't like U.S. foreign policy. And France is a nuclear power, but I don't think that we can't say for sure that France would never launch a nuclear strike
on us.
May
I respond to that?
I mean, it's just whole point is absurd.
Go ahead, Carol.
Of course. Well, again, whatever you may want to say about the people of France, France has never deployed chemical or biological weapons. Saddam Hussein has. And the fact is that Saddam Hussein trains and finances terrorists. He is a terrorist. And I utterly reject your sneering references to America as some sort of benevolent empire, because, in fact, America is a very, very benevolent country, as has been evidenced by the number of good things around the world, however reluctant some people may be to admit them, since the end of World War II.
Okay, Carol, I want to pose a question.
Sonali Kolhatkar, the moderator of this debate, went on to explain how the U.S. was supporting Iraq during its war with Iran in 1988, when Iraq gassed their own people.
Why didn't the U.S. go to war with Iraq in 1988? Why is that not okay to leave in the past, and why now today?
Right. Well, as a preliminary matter, we are not going to war with Iraq. Number one, the president hasn't said that that's a done deal to start with. But number two, we are not going into Iraq if we do because they gassed the Kurds. The fact that Saddam Hussein has gassed his own people is an indication of the brutality that he is willing to exercise.
But we've dropped an atom bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Well, we did that to save millions of American lives that would have been lost had we had to invade. And we did that to end a war. And if Mr. Jensen wants to talk about the chance to fulfill hegemonic and imperial ambitions, we certainly could have done that in 1945 had we had the interest.
Okay. Now, let me let Professor Jensen talk.
I want to go back to this notion that the gassing of the Kurds
Absolutely.
And Iran... Let me finish. The gassing of the Kurds and Iran is an indication of the brutality of Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
Yes, it is an indication of his brutality. Like many leaders around the world, he is capable of great brutality. The point of that is the only two times in his history that Saddam Hussein has used chemical weapons is when he had the implicit support of the U.S. He's not crazy. He may be a thug. He may be a murderous dictator, but he's not insane. He used chemical weapons when he knew the United States and the West in general would back him up. For Saddam Hussein to even think of launching a strike against any U.S. facility or any U.S. interest is akin to suicide. He knows perfectly well that the United States would destroy him. And these allegations or these sort of leaps of illogic that Bush put out last night, for instance, saying that Saddam Hussein is the threat is also that he would give weapons of mass destruction if he had them, which we don't know because we kicked out the inspectors 4 years ago, that he would give them to terrorist groups. Now, does that make any sense? Here you have a man who is depicted to us as a murderous, all-controlling, all-powerful dictator, which I agree he is. Is he going to give weapons of mass destruction to a group outside of his control? He doesn't control al-Qaeda. He knows what al-Qaeda is capable of, and he knows that groups like al-Qaeda might target him because he's a secular nationalist, not an Islamicist.
I would like to allow Carol to respond. Carol, Absolutely. If you can take your time, please, and respond.
Absolutely. First of all, this allegation that Saddam Hussein would certainly never give his weapons of mass destruction to terrorists. There is no reason why he would not. He and al-Qaeda have had high-level contacts going back a decade, and he has trained al-Qaeda in bomb-making and weapons manufacturing.
Is there evidence?
Yes, absolutely there's evidence. There's evidence from our secret services and from the Czechs and from...
Have you seen the evidence?
You know, no, I haven't seen evidence, and I didn't have to be in Nagasaki to know that an atomic bomb was dropped. I mean, I can rely on accurate and reliable secondhand accounts.
Robert Jensen, professor of journalism at the University of Texas, and Carol Platt LeBeau, a political expert and recent consultant for the Ashcroft for Senate campaign. They were on the KPFK morning show hosted by Sonali Kolhatkar. The report was prepared by Christopher Sprinkle and Fidel Rodriguez. Standing Deer offers a Native American outlook on the push for war from Pacifica Station KPFT in Houston.
Well, it looks like Strongman Little Bush and the Gang of Five, as Mumia named them, are just about ready to send our neighborhood kids over to Iraq to murder a bunch of people, just like his daddy, ex-CIA Director Big Bush, did in 91. Before they kick it off, they'll come up with another big lie that will irrefutably tie Saddam to al-Qaeda. The thing that really tears me up is the big lies that Little Bush has been telling and how so many people believe every word he says because he's the President of the United States. Some folks think the President would never lie and he'd never lie to the American people. And they're insulted if you don't believe the President's lies. But you know, it's easy for us Native people to know the government lies to the people. That goes back to our ancestors when the United States made all those treaties with our people and unilaterally abrogated every single one and continued with the genocide, killing our people like flies. So we know the government lies. And Little Bush, the shrub, is one of the greatest natural-born liars ever to grace the White House. Now his daddy, Big Bush, wasn't no slouch and must run in the family. Does anybody remember the stories Bush told in 91 about the little babies that Iraq was throwing out of the incubators and letting them die? Of course, that proved to be a lie, but there was so little coverage in the press when the lie was exposed that very few people were even aware of it. They only remembered the smashing front-page headlines across this nation about the sweet little imaginary babies being flung out of their incubators. Little Bush can tell any lie he wants to because he never has to prove anything he says with documentary evidence. None of the politicians on the Democratic side would dare suggest Bush Jr. was lying because they want to get reelected. Plus, they want to steal Iraq's oil just as bad as oil czar Cheney wants to. I wonder if they just put a gun to Saddam's head and said, "Your oil or your life," and Saddam gave it up, if that would satisfy their lust to kill and they wouldn't have to go to war. Just rob him in a dark alley like the thugs they are. Then at least it would be an honest robbery and Bush Jr. could shut up about weapons of mass destruction and regime change. This whole Iraqi war is based on lies and the self-serving motivations will never be disclosed until the historians write about it 20 years from now. Little Bush and the Gang of Five needed to change the subject so the people wouldn't be thinking about where is that Osama bin Laden guy that Little Bush was going to track down, smoke him out of his hole, and bring him in dead or alive like the Texas sheriff he is. They didn't want the public to think about the economy tanking or that people lost their life savings due to corporate criminals that had been pillars of the community while they robbed investors of all that they had and then gave vast sums of money to Little Bush's election campaign. So when the midterm elections take place, all the people will be thinking about is their hero commander-in-chief who's bombing Iraq in order to kill all the evildoers and save civilization. Then all the politicians who strew roses in Little Bush's path will get reelected. I'll have to admit it's a brilliant strategy, whoever thought it up. Sounds like ex-CIA director Daddy Bush. He's hated Saddam for over a decade because Saddam not being assassinated in the Gulf War was one of the big reasons Big Bush was a one-term president. The bad thing about a war with Iraq is the way America fights wars. They have their soldiers avoid the enemy while the bombers 10,000 feet in the sky bomb babies sedately by computer. Their smart bombs sometimes come in the window and get in bed with somebody's grandma. A lot of innocent people are going to die when the moral imbecile Bush Jr. robs Iraq of their oil. All during the Cold War, the rulers of America denounced communist Russia for having designs on conquering the world. But now that America is the sole superpower, they've adopted world conquest as their own ambition. They've set their sights on controlling all the Mideast oil so Americans can ride around in their SUVs and shop till they drop. They bombed Afghanistan, killing no telling how many innocent civilians so they could have pipelines to carry the oil and natural gas of the Caspian region to deep water ports. As they always do when they take over a country, they installed a puppet named Hamid Karzai, who requires a contingent of American special forces to guard him to keep his own people from killing him. Next on America's agenda was to conquer Iraq, which is the second largest oil-producing nation in the world. First, they need a regime change because Saddam would never let America steal Iraq's oil without telling the whole world what was going on. The plan, then, is to assassinate the president of Iraq after using America's weapons of mass destruction to destroy any resistance, and then installing a ruler they can do business with, just as they did in Afghanistan. Maybe they'll give Iraq to Dan Quayle. Now that Iraq has agreed to unconditional weapons inspections, Bush Jr.'s handlers have him moving the goalpost back. It was never about weapons of mass destruction anyway. It was and is about three things: oil, oil, and oil. This is Standing Deer speaking for the Houston chapter of the American Indian Movement.
You're listening to Pacifica Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. When we come back, some not often heard views on patriotism.